نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، أما بعد. Islam in a society requires that there be a wali to guard the injustice that might occur amongst the people, to make sure that the strong do not take advantage of the weak, the rich do not exploit the poor. So the guardianship of wilayat is necessary from the top. And the second thing is that the people, the followers, they maintain the practice of Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. When a society does the obligation of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, then the society is protected from decline. When they stop the practice of Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al Munkar, then the society declines to what Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam had said. Minhum al Muslito bi Saifihi wal Mu'lino bi Sharrihi وَالْمُجْلِبُ بِرَجْلِهِ وَخَيْلِهِ. That a society where oppressors become more oppressive, injustice intensifies, people now have the courage to raise their voice against the leader and draw their sword against the Imam of the time. These are the signs of a society in decline. These are the signs of people who have given up Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. The people who came out against Ali went to battle. They were responsible for killing many people, taking the lives of many Muslims, doing vicious and atrocious crimes against people and society. When you look at them, you look at the fact that any tyrant, but especially a tyrant who has the power to kill and take life, how many people have they killed? How many lives have they destroyed? How many homes they have broken? How many women they have widowed and how many children they have orphaned? It's not just the people who die in the battlefield who are at loss. The harm and the loss also goes to the people who are left behind them. The crimes are unmentionable that they have done. And after describing them, Imam in this khutbah makes a short statement regarding their crimes. I want us to pay attention to what the Imam has said in relationship to the crimes that have been committed. I mean, really, when you are speaking about, let's say, Muawiyah, who came to battle in Siffin, killed thousands of people, responsible for thousands of. Imam Ali was telling him, listen, let's not get the people involved. How about you and me? We get together and fight and get this over with. There's no need for bloodshed. But you see, the blood was shed. Muslims were killed in the thousands. And looking at all these crimes, Imam Ali now makes a statement about what these criminals have done. Really, when he explains this, that what they have done and how bad they have done these things, then he makes a statement. He says, وَلَبِئْسَ الْمَتْجَرِ. He says, وَلَبِئْسَ الْمَتْجَرِ. This is the Imam's response to their crimes, to the war crimes and to the crimes against society. Imam Ali saying, they made a bad trade. They made a bad trade. He's saying that, you know, they were making a deal, they were making business, and they just made a bad deal. Now really, my friends, look at this very carefully, this sentence. Imam, when you look at this sentence, I mean, you get the feeling that the Imam is being too lenient with these people. Don't you get that feeling that he's being too lenient with these people? Instead of saying, these are oppressors, criminals, they should be tried and killed and executed. Instead of that saying, they made a bad deal. They made a bad trade. That's it. They made a bad trade. Antara dunya linafsika tamanan. Wa mimma laka min Allahi evada. He says, what was that bad trade? He says, because they have made dunya the prize for themselves. They have made dunya the prize for themselves, for their lives. They have made a price, and dunya was their price. And hence, they did all these crimes because they made a bad deal. They made a bad trade. My friends, really, I want us to pay attention to this statement of Imam Ali. One of the most subtlest, the most subtle and interesting teachings of Islam that Imam is teaching here. Really. The way Imam Ali taught religion, it is regretful that Islam and religion is not taught this way. It's really, you know, when you look at it, then you feel like, how are we teaching religion? And see how Imam Ali has taught religion, how he has taught ideology. He says, after all the crimes they have done, they killed thousands of people. Imam, all you're saying is that they did a bad trade, that's it? That's all? But you see, how Imam is teaching us Islam. And this is something that when you learn it, you really enjoy it. I mean, really something that goes to your heart. So that you understand what it means. These people have crime. I mean, they killed people. You know, if someone kills someone here, you don't say, oh, you know, he just made a bad deal, that's it. But he took his life. Let alone someone like, for example, Yazid or Saddam, you know, kills thousands of people and saying, oh, you know, they just made a bad trade. You know, they sold themselves for dunya, that's it. My friends, understand this teaching, how Imam Ali is teaching Islam. Let me explain that if you send me salawats. My friends, the first stage the first stage of sin, the first step towards ma'siyat and guna, is not being bad. Meaning, if a person is bad, if a person is a criminal, the first step towards crime is not being bad. It's not a choice between good and bad. If someone is a criminal, when you go back in his history and see the first steps he took towards it, towards becoming a criminal, towards becoming a zalim, towards becoming a sinner, you see the first step of sin is never the choice between good and evil. You don't make the choice of being bad. The first stage of sin and guna and masiyat is to be less, not be bad. Is to want less, to choose less, to settle for less. That is the first stage of sin. Any criminal, you look back in his life, any sinner, if you see someone doing guna, the worst sin, adultery, listen, whatever he is doing, go back in his history, you see that wasn't his first choice. The path towards sin is not a choice between good and evil. It's never a choice between good and evil, black and white. Really, it is a choice between good and better. That's the choice he makes first. He settles for less. He chooses good over that which is better. He chooses good over better. This is the first step. The first stage of sin is not a choice between water and poison. Here's water, here's poison, take it. No one will take poison. No, the first choice is between two waters, good water, bad water. And you choose the bad water, or it's good water and better water. This is good water, this is better water. So now you choose the good one over the better. When you settle for less, when you don't choose the best for yourself, and you settle for less, this is the first step towards sin. It's a choice between, for example, two flowers. This is a good flower, but this is the best flower. Now, if he chooses the good flower, he hasn't done a crime. He hasn't committed a sin. But he has trained himself to settle for less. He's trained himself for what? To settle for less. Those who settle for less, they haven't done any crime. But those who settle for less will never be useful for religion also. They're never useful to the imam also. They're never useful to the imam. They're always, because they settle for less. This is the first stage. In order for you to go, I mean, you haven't done anything wrong. It's not a crime, it's not a sin. But because you settle for something less, now you see you have opened the doors for yourself to now lower your standards and go downwards. This is the road to decline. Not to sin at first, but to settle for something less than what you could have gotten. What is the price for you? This is, my friend, understand this. The first stage, that attitude that says, you know, they ask the question this way, you know what I mean? Olana, is this halal for me? Well, you know, yes, it's halal for you. As an example, I'll say, I've been asked this many times over, so I can give examples from my own experience I have with people asking me questions. They'll ask me, Mohana, is it allowed to have tattoos? I say, yes, it's allowed to have tattoos. And, oh, you see, Mohana said it's allowed to have tattoos. Let's go and get a tattoo. Wait a minute. Yes, tattoos are halal. But why aren't you asking the question that you're supposed to ask? Tell me, is that your standard? Just to say that if it's halal, I'll do it. My friends, understand this. The issue, the choice of believers is never a choice between, for example, haram and halal. That's never their choice. Mu'mineen, I mean, to them, obviously they're away from halal. They're not going to drink alcohol. They're not going to do zina and these type of things. That is never their choices. The choice they make is between two halal things. When you look at two halal things, now you have to choose which is the best for you. So don't ask the question, is tattoos halal? Ask me the question, will Rasulullah approve of this? Would he like this? Would he have done this? See, now it's a different thing. Yes, it's halal, but it's better not to. So what have you chosen? I've chosen that which is allowed for me. So when you choose that which is lesser, then you train yourself to settle for less. It's not a crime. But you see, you are on your way to a decline. You are on your way down. My friends, a society, when it starts, an individual also, and a society, when it starts to choose less for itself, and starts to settle for less for itself, then you see that society is opening the door of decline towards itself. Is getting on a slide that is going to go downwards. When you look at history, then you will need the people who came and broke the door on Fatima. Those people who came and broke the door on Fatima. And as a result of which, she died. Tell me, did the people of Medina hate Fatima? Did the people who lived in Medina, the dwellers of Medina, did they hate her? Did they have the intention to kill her? The people in Medina. No. Right? I mean, you know, they had respect for her. The people of Medina knew her. They respected her. But when it happened, when the door was broken, what was their problem with Fatima? What was their problem with Fatima? Their problem with Fatima was that she is talking too much. She shouldn't be talking. Let it be. Let it go. So what? You know, I mean, so what? These people became in charge. Let it go. Don't rock the boat. She should be quiet and silent. Let it be. She was talking. She was telling the world what wrong was done. But then everyone started to have a headache with her. She's crying for her father. They said, we don't like her crying. Let her get out of the town. So they had to move her out of town, so she can go outside and cry. Now, if you look at that time and the decline that happened. My friend, the decline doesn't happen. For example, no one comes, no one would come at the death of the Prophet to kill Ahlul Bayt. No one came to kill them. Oh, we're going to slaughter them. We're going to butcher them. No, no one wanted to do that. They just wanted them to stop talking and let it be. Wherever, whoever is in charge, let them be. Do not cause fitna. That's it. Don't cause fitna. They remain quiet on that. They remain quiet. Most of the people in Medina, they didn't do anything. Slowly, you see, started happening. Maybe at that time you can say, well, you know, I mean, no crime was done. It was an accident. Nothing happened. Really, this is that. So they started excusing. They started justifying themselves slowly. But you see, that position that she was in, and look at, Imam Hussein's time in Karbala. What happened there? Those people who came to kill Imam Hussein, did they come to kill Imam Hussein? Yes, they came to kill him. Their intentions were to kill him. They wanted to kill him. So you see that society went from where to where. My friends, crime does not appear until the first choice of wanting less for yourself is made. When you start settling for less, then you start going towards sin. That's when you start to go towards sin. And then you see yourself going on a downward spiral, because you have learned to settle for less for what you are. What is Imam Ali saying? He's saying, "Wala bi'sal matjar." They made a bad trade. What did they do? Antara dunya li nafsika thamanan. That they have seen, or they took dunya as the price for themselves. Dunya became their price, meaning that they are selling themselves for dunya. Why is Imam Ali calling this a bad trade? Because he's saying, don't you understand that Allah did not make dunya your price? He didn't make dunya your price. He made it. What did he say in the Quran? Inna Allah ishtara min al-mu'minina anfusakum wa amwalahum bi anna lahumul jannah. Allah has bought your nafs, your life, in exchange for what? In exchange for Jannat. Jannat is your value. Jannat is the price Allah set for you. And when you choose anything less than Jannah to sell yourself for, you are making a bad trade. This is bad business. Allah made this for you. And hence what happens? Where does it start from? You start by choosing less for yourself, my friends. My friends, you can still be a Muslim by choosing less. Yes, when you choose less, you're still a Muslim. But you're on a downward spiral. And you know what? When you're going declining downwards, now the only thing that can help you is if Allah does something to you, hit you in the back of the head, give you a trial, give you some tragedy that you wake up from and come back. Because you put yourself going downwards. When you start going downwards, now the only thing that can save you is Tawbah. That's the only thing that can save you now. That Allah wakes you up now, because you're going downwards. You chose that for yourself. Otherwise, those who choose less for themselves, they might be Muslims, but they are never useful for Islam. They can never be useful for the Imam. If you want to be useful for Islam, then your attitude cannot be such that you are choosing less for yourself. If you want to be with the Imam, then your attitude must be that, Allah, I want the best for myself. When I have the choice, I will choose the best for myself. Whenever you start choosing the best for yourself, then you have the capacity to be with the Imam. Really, my friends, understand this. Many times we make choices in life and we need to analyze those choices. Was this the best thing for me to do or not? Islam doesn't want you to be a loser. Losers cannot help the Imam. Only winners can help Imam. Those who strive, Islam wants you to strive for excellence, not mediocrity. Oh, I'm happy being mediocre. Oh, no, I'm happy the way I am. Why are you happy the way you are? What's that standard? You should say, no, I want to be the best that I can be. I want to be the best. Not mediocre, someone who's a nobody, I'm fine. We are asking Allah, inshallah, help me just to, get into heaven somewhere. Give me a back door where I can enter. Show me a back door where I can enter. Why do you want to just go into heaven? What kind of goal is that? Is that our goal? That, oh, you know, we just want to get into heaven, that's it. Alhamdulillah, we'll be happy when we get into heaven. Why is that the goal? Just, you know, if we can make it, alhamdulillah, we're good. That should not, that is mediocrity, my friends. We are choosing mediocrity for ourselves. We are choosing to be mediocre. Why don't you make this dua that, Allah, I want to be in the neighborhood of Ahlul Bayt in Jannat. I want to be next to my Imam in Jannat. That's the way I want to be. Not someone, you know, who just scrapes in there. And friends, Islam wanted mu'mineen to strive for excellence. When you strive for excellence, your attitude is different. You don't look at, oh, you know, is this halal for me? No, you don't ask that question. You ask, what is the best thing for me right now? And the choice is not between two, halal and haram. The choice is between halal and halal. Two halal things. Which is better for me? Always wanting better for yourself and the best for yourself is the attitude of a winner. And those who are winners, they can be with the Imam. Those who stood in Karbala with Imam Hussein, none of them were losers. None of them were like, you know, okay, you know, I'm stuck here, so let me die. No one was. Imam Hussein made sure of that. I don't want losers here. That's why on the night of Ashura, he told them, listen, if you're here because of bayat, get away. I have taken my bayat away from you. If you want Jannat, I'll give you Jannat. Don't worry about it. You don't have to die tomorrow. He gave them all the choices to choose. And then they choose that we don't want safety in dunya. We don't want dunya. We even don't want Jannat. We want to be with you. We want to be with you. You see, this is, my friends, the attitude of a winner. This is the attitude Islam wants us to have. Not a loser. You know what? I'm stuck in Islam, you know, with the believers. That's it. So I'm here. No. My friends, choose the best for yourself. This is what Islam wants. If you want to be with the Imam, this is the way to be. And that's why you see the attitude of a mu'min is different. He doesn't waste his time in dunya. He knows that this is not where he's going to be. He has better plans for himself. Let me give you an example. You send me a salawat. You know, a companion of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam came to him. He was a mu'min, a good brother, muttaqi, mu'min brother, very good brother. You know, he was with the Imam, always there with him, supporting him. You know, but again, you know, mu'mineen also get weird ideas. Right? Because, you know, whenever they spend some idle time, you know, where they're on a vacation or something, they do get some weird ideas. So he came to the Imam and said, Imam, I'm thinking of making a big house for myself. He was rich. He could afford it. He said, I'm planning to make a big house, you know, for myself, you know. Yeah, so we're working on the plans, you know, getting the engineers together, you know, getting it all, you know, done. This and that. You know, so obviously, you know, he wanted Imam's approval on this. But tell me, is it haram to build a big house? No, it's not. It's not haram. It's halal. Now, my friend, understand the question here. You know, he's not asking about haram. Of course he won't ask about haram. He's asking about something that's perfectly halal. Perfectly halal. Nothing wrong with that. He can afford it. He's rich. He helps the Imam in every way he can. And you see, he is telling the Imam that, listen, I want to build a bigger house. What do you think? He's saying to the Imam, what do you think? And just pay attention to the Imam's answer. Alright? How did the Imam reply to him? He didn't say it's haram and halal. He didn't say, you know, oh, you know, what are you trying to do with this? No, he didn't say anything like that. He just gave a principle, an usul that you can live your life by. He says, Al-Mu'min lagwa an hadha. He says, a mu'min doesn't have time for these things. He didn't say it's halal. He says mu'min doesn't have time for these things. Why? Because he's trying to make his house in Jannah. He has no time to make a house in this dunya. Where are you getting the time from? You should be worried about your house you're going to make there. My friend, understand this. What is a mu'min thinking? Look at the mu'min's thinking is this. Really, if you are here in Seattle, if I come over here in Seattle and I'm here for, you know, yeah, let's say you have a job over here for 3 months. Is it 3 months and you go back, you know, wherever you came from? You know, 3 month job. So now you come over here 3 months and you're going to go back home, wherever your home is. Let's say, you know, Florida. Right? So you come over here to Seattle for 3 months and say, you know what? I want to make a big house in Seattle. Now tell me, you ask the person, how long are you here for? 3 months. You going back after that? Yes. So why are you trying to spend so much time building a big house over here? You're going back home. Why don't you think of building it there? He said, no, I have money here. My job is good. I'm paying well. Alhamdulillah, you know, I'm in the millions. But still, if you're not going to stay here, why are you building here? It makes no sense. A mu'min is trying to build his house in his home. His home is Jannah. Allah has said that already. Your home is Jannah. Instead of building your house there, if you build it here, what kind of foolishness is that? He doesn't have time for these things. Mu'min doesn't have time for these things. That's what the Imam is saying. He's not occupied with these things. How can he be occupied with these things? You have bigger goals for yourself. Your goals are higher than that. That's what the Imam is saying. Don't shoot low. Shoot high. Aim high. That is the attitude of a mu'min, my friends. If you want to see yourself, what kind of a mu'min are you? Are you a mu'min who settles for mediocrity, or you are a mu'min who wants excellence for himself? What kind of a mu'min are you? Look at yourself when you make dua. When you make dua, just look at yourself. What do you ask? What is your hajat? When you say, you know, ask for hajat, what is your hajat? What is your need? What do you ask for? Really, you know, like when you go for example ziyarat and you go to the imam, what do you ask the imam for? What is your attitude? It's really ziyarat is mustahab. There's a lot of reward in ziyarat, especially Karbala. Go to Karbala and the Imam Radha, you'll see that there's so much reward in ziyarat and going for ziyarat. Inshallah, may Allah take all of us there, Karbala. When you go for ziyarat and you ask hajat over there, you ask for dua over there, what are you asking? You know, really, you know, it's time. Going for ziyarat really is a reflection on our own self. Where do we stand? What is our iman? What is our attitude? What kind of a mu'min am I? Really, it's a time for reflection for ourselves. You know, I heard about this guy who went to the haram of Imam Radha alayhi salam. And he was making his duas there louder than everyone else in the hall. Everyone could hear him. Ya Imam, Mawla, this and that. And he's crying, hitting himself, crying and so many things, you know, for his hajat, this and that. People like looking at him, and maybe he's really in need, you know, someone, cancer patient, I don't know, some problem, terminally ill, you know, and he's making dua to Allah, and they all feel sad for him, this and that, you know. One person went to him, you know, said that, hey, listen, if he is really in need, let me go and see what he wants. I mean, you know, he says, you know, I mean, Agha, you know, you're making all this noise, and you're making all these crying sound, this and that for the Imam. What is your need? What do you need from the Imam? He said, I'm in need, I am indebted, I need 10,000 tuman. How you need 10,000 tuman and you're making all this noise? All this sound and noises and bothering everyone else? He took our $10,000 and said, here, take the 10,000, stop bothering the imam. What are you doing bothering the imam for 10,000 tuman? A lot of times you see that when we go in front of the imam, what we ask tells us what kind of a mu'min we are. You know, you see there are those mu'mineen who, when they go to the imam, they have a list, a wish list. You know, they're a wish list. Imam, you know, I mean, you know, we need a heater in the house, an AC, and we need this and we need that, and you know, Santa Claus, I mean, and you know what, there's nothing wrong with asking. Alhamdulillah, it's good. Go ahead, ask. It doesn't mean you're not a Shia. No, you are a Shia. Alhamdulillah. At least you came to the right door to ask. It's good you came to this door. You know, you'll get something. Right? It'll be much better than what you're asking for. It'll be much better than what you're asking for when you'll get it from the imam. But the issue is this, my friends. When you go to the imam, you see these people have list of things that they're asking for, this and that. They're also Shias. This is one attitude. This is one type of a mu'min. And these are mu'min who have settled for less. They are mu'min who are settled for mediocrity. That's why this is their hajat from the imam, a wish list they take. Now there's another attitude when you approach the imam. There's another way of approaching the imam. When you go to the imam, you say, imam, I reached Karbala. I'm in front of the imam. Imam is there. Imam, I have come to you. I don't want anything from you. I came here to ask you if I can help you. I don't want any help from you. I'm here to help you. That's why I've come here. I want to help you. I'm here for you. See, this is another attitude, my friends. These are the mu'mineen. You see, those are also Shia, those who are asking imam for this and that. They're also Shias. But the ones who are asking, who go to the imam offering them help, these are the Shias that the imam wants. They are with the imam. You see, when you listen to Imam Hussein in Karbala, you will understand this. What kind of Shias does he want? Which type of Shia did the imam want? Those who are asking the imam for help, or those who are going to offer the imam help? When we look at that, then we understand that no, the Shias that the imam want are the ones who will help the imam. That's why Imam Hussein called out to them and said, "Hal min nasirin yansurna?" Is there someone who will help me, not ask me for help? These are the Shias the imam wants. You want to be with the imam? Have the attitude of a winner. Excellence. That is what is required, my friends. That is what you need if you want to be with the imam. This is where we need to be. Now, crime and sin, my friends, understand this. The first step is to choose less for yourself. That's where it comes from. Now let's also hear from what Shaitan has to say. You know, you heard what Allah and the Imams have said. And some people are not convinced until Shaitan says it. So, you know, obviously the Imams have told us this, that when Shaitan was being taken out of heaven, he was asked, how will you misguide the people? He said, how will you make them do sins? And he said that, listen, if I make them sin, if he makes a person sin, he says that they see that they have done wrong and they will regret it. They will regret what they have done, they will feel remorse, and they'll do tawbah and they'll come back. So he says, you know, it's useless for me to make them do sins, because every time I make them sin, then they feel bad about themselves and they come back to Allah and they do tawbah and Allah accepts their tawbah. And they're back again. So for me, it's a revolving door. I can't make them do. If I make them do sins, it is not useful for me. Well, so how will you misguide them? He says, well, no, I will not make them sin. I will make them choose and settle for less. I will make them settle for less. When they will settle for less, they will not feel bad about themselves. They won't feel bad because they're still doing halal. They won't feel bad. And when they start doing that, then I will make that standard go lower and lower until they come to the borderline of sin, and I will make them sin. And when they sin after coming down this ladder, then they will not feel bad about the sin that they have done, and they will never make tawbah. Because this is how shaitan misguides. This is what he does. He doesn't make you choose haram. No, he will make you choose something less. He will make you choose something that is less than what you should be doing. Not the best. And when you let go of the best and choose less for yourself, you are going one step closer to sin and crime. And you will go downwards until you enter the arena of crime and become a criminal. And soon as you know it, a innocent child who was, you know, loved by many people in his family, if not anyone, his mother loved him, that child will soon become Saddam. No. Saddam was loved when he was a kid, right? I'm sure he was adorable. I'm sure he was adorable when he was a child. How did that innocent child become Saddam? How? All these people, Mafia, all these people, you look at them when they were children. What, they were evil when they were 1 year old? No. How did they reach there, my friends? This is how you reach there. By choosing less for yourself, settling for less, and you end up becoming a criminal. My friends, this is how decline happens. If we learn that, then we will know. You know, they say that, you know, what's wrong with music? Oh, you know, what's wrong with music? Why is music haram? You know, I mean, obviously it's not like drinking alcohol or, you know, I mean, adultery and all kinds of these horrible things. No, you see, again, music is one of those things that shaitan makes you listen to, because when you listen to music, you don't feel bad about yourself. Because you always hear from pseudo-alims that it's halal. And you justify it because you like listening to it. Once you start listening to it, then it will break you down and make you go towards sins. Yes. Understand this. Well, you know, what does music do to us? Hey, music is very simple, my friends. If the youth are listening, if they're not here, then the adults can explain this to the youth, and the youth can explain it to other one else. Tell me, my friend. All music does is that it makes stupid things look intelligent. That's all it does. It makes foolish things look intelligent. Have you ever been to a club? All right, that's an incriminating question. Right? But if you have, you will see people are dancing to music. People are dancing to music. If you stop that music, would they keep on dancing? I mean, right away they stop. They stop right away. What happened? Where's the music? Who turned it off? If you see someone dancing without music, how would he look? If you see someone dance without music, how would he look? Stupid. He would look stupid. He would look dumb. Right? So what does music do? It makes a stupid thing look intelligent. It makes a stupid thing, it makes stupidity look half intelligent so you can accept it. This is what it does. So when it does that to you, you start to look at things and look at them good, in a good way. Why? Because Music is making you do that. When you listen to music, like, hey man, you know, you think you're cool. If you turn the music off, you won't be cool anymore. What you're doing won't be cool. That's what happens. It makes stupidity look good in your eyes so that you can do it. So you don't feel bad doing it. And you go on with this until there's a decline and you enter the area of sin and crime. This is where it leads to, my friends. This is how shaitan misguides. And here we are, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, you're just for relaxed. Exactly, it works, it may, the whole idea is to make you relaxed. When your mind is relaxed, then you don't take things seriously. Exactly, that's what exactly it wants you to do. My friends, this is what we need to worry about. If you do not want to sin, then you need to start with the first step of choosing the best for yourself. Do not settle for less than what you should be getting. When there's a choice between good and better, choose better for yourself. Ask yourself the question, would the Imam do this? Would the Imam approve of this? Do that and then you will see you will grow. Then you will see that you will grow higher instead of going downwards. People made dunya the prize for themselves. In the time of Imam Ali, they took dunya to do what? To leave Imam Ali alone. What they do? Understand? What was the prize for their life, for their nafs, for dunya? They took dunya as the prize. For to do what? They left the Imam alone. When we come to Karbala, now dunya, right now look at inflation. Dunya is not just leaving the Imam alone, you are taking dunya to kill the Imam now. You see, in the time of Imam Ali, dunya was just the price to leave the Imam alone so that you don't side with him. That's what Muawiyah paid, the golden coins to people so they can get away from Ali. So the people in the time of Ali, they left dunya, they took dunya to leave the Imam. In the time of Imam Hussein, they are taking dunya to kill the Imam. You see the difference, you see the decline. You see how society is going downwards. This is, my friends, what Imam is teaching us. We need to understand what is the practice of Islam. This is how we go downwards. When dunya becomes the price of killing the Imam. My friends, but one thing is for sure. When you take dunya to oppose the Imam or to kill the Imam, that dunya will never reach you. That dunya will never reach you. How many people went after dunya in Karbala? All of them wanted dunya. They all sold themselves for dunya so they can get something from them, from Yazid. They're all expecting something, that anticipation. They're expecting from Yazid that he's going to give something. My friends, understand this about dunya also. Right? Dunya, right, is never what it looks like. When you sin, remember this, the anticipation of sin is better than the sin itself. Something to understand about sin. When you do masiyat and guna, you see, waiting for the sin is more exciting than the sin itself. You know, if you know that, for example, on the weekend you're going to go and do some sin practice, you see the whole week you're all excited about that. But when you actually do the sin, you see, it's not what it's hyped up to be. It's always a letdown. It's always a letdown. It's never what it's meant or hyped up to be. Understand this about dunya. That's why, my friends, when you see Akhirat, Akhirat is something that no matter how much hype you hear about it, Mawla says that whatever you imagine about Jannat, it is better than what you can imagine it to be. If you keep that in mind, then you would know what to aim for. Those people who came out for dunya, you see what they did in order to get dunya. Really, my friends, you know, every one of them, what happened in Karbala? Look at them, and then you will understand what they went through, what Ahlul Bayt went through, you know. Every one of them wanted to do something so that they can get a reward. You know, on the 11th of Muharram, there was a announcement made. The announcement was that whoever slaughters the heads of Shuhada will have a reward from Yazid. Everyone who can get a head will have a reward of this much from Yazid. And everyone went out looking for the heads of Shuhada. Went out looking for heads of Shuhada. For what? So that you can get some dinars and dirhams. You can get some money for it. You are slaughtering someone's head. You are decapitating them. But then you see, when they got the heads, they said, you know what, let's find more heads. They remembered that a child, an infant, was killed also. An infant was killed. And so they went out looking for that infant. And they said, Hussein must have hidden that infant. He must have hidden that infant. So they went after that. And they looked for that infant. You know how they looked for that infant? They went out with their spears. And they started to hit the spears on the ground. And started making holes in the spear. They knew that it must be behind the tent. So they all poured themselves behind the tent in order to look for that infant. And someone found that infant. When the spear went inside, it went into the body of Ali Asghar. It went into the body of Ali Asghar. And when he was taken, when he took out the spear, the body came attached with it. The body of the infant came attached with it. Rabab, who was sitting on the ground and praying that they did not find the body of Ali Asghar. They took out that body. And when they took the body out, you know, he took out the spear and he took the body out from the spear first. He took it out from the spear. He took the spear out of the body. And then he held the child. And started to slaughter his head. May Allah curse each and every one of them. Rabab saw Ali Asghar's head on the spear. When she saw it on the spear, we can only imagine this, my friend. We can only imagine this. What would a mother feel when she sees the head of her child? Sakina looked at his head, wide-eyed, not knowing what to think. She was too young to understand the pain that's going on. But the mother felt the pain. She held Sakina close to herself. And it was a source of pain all along. You know, they took the head and the head was kept in front of the mother. And every time the mother looked up, she saw the head of her child. The same child that she had in her lap. My friend, when a mother looks at the child, motherhood is something else. You know, when you look at the child, how would it feel for you to see that child in that condition? Umeraba went through a lot looking at Eliezer. But you know, she held Sakina with her. Every time she looked at Eliezer, she would look at Sakina and would just hug her, keep her close to herself, at least finding comfort in her. Sakina, you're with me, Sakina. Come here, Sakina. But Sakina also, you know what type of condition she was in? Her cheeks were red from the slaps of shimmer. Her ears were broken apart. That's how Sakina was. And when she held Sakina, at least she had Sakina with her. But you see, a mother who went through the tragedies, you know, every mother mourned for her son. Umme Layla, Umme Farwa, all of them, they mourned for their son. Their sons were gone. No one had hope of another. Rabab had Sakina with her. But then she went to Sham. Sakina also left her. Now Umme Rabab didn't know who to hug, who to hold, who to find comfort in. That's why Umme Rabab, when she came to Karbala, when she went back to Karbala, she did not want to leave Karbala. Imam Sajjad came to her and said, Mother, it is time for us to go back to Medina. It is time for us to go back to home. You know what she said? I mean, imagine the pain that she said this from. Where is this words coming from? Ali Asghar in Karbala, Sakina in Sham, no hope of any other child, no hope of any future. Now she says, Sajjad, which home are you talking about? There's no one at home. If I go back, there's no one there. Hussein is here, Asghar is here, Sakina is in Sham. I have nowhere to go back to. Yusuf Mirabab went and made a promise to Hussein. But you know what? She made a promise to Hussein. In Karbala, she made a promise when she came back for Arbaid. She made a promise to Hussein. And she said, My Wali, you are my guardian. My Wali, my Imam, I make a promise to you. You have given your life in Allah's way. My son has died in your way. Sakina was left in Sham. I have no one to live. Your body I have seen. My friend, understand this. The last time Umme Rabab and everyone saw the body of Hussein, what was lying naked on Karbala. That's the last they have seen of that body. They didn't know what became of that body. What happened to that body? They didn't know what had become. They didn't know what happened to Ali Asghar's body. They didn't know it was buried or not. When they came back to Karbala, Umme Rabab made an oath with Hussein. Hussein, until I am alive, I will never feel the coolness of the shade, Hussein. When she went to Medina, every day when the sun would rise, Umme Rabab would go in the yard and she would sit in the sun and mourn for Hussein. Sometimes crying for Hussein, sometimes for Ali Asghar, sometimes for Sakina. What can she not cry for? Everything she lost. And every day she used to go out there. Zainab called her one day and sent Imam Sajjad to go out there. My son, go out there and check her. He went out there and said, Mother, come on in, Mother. You don't look well. Come inside. Umme Rabab looked at Sajjad. You know, really, my friends, these words, I want you to understand the pain that is in these words. Umar Abhab looked up at Sajjad and said, Sajjad, my son, are you telling me as a son or as an imam? So it was hard for Umar Abhab, you know, it was very hard for her. You know why? Because she made an oath to one imam and the other imam now is asking her to go. Which imam do I listen to? Which imam do I listen to? That decision was so hard that Umar Abhab said to Allah, that Allah, help me make a decision. Do I keep the oath to Hussein or do I listen to Imam Sajjad? Who do I listen to? Imam Sajjad waited for her. Zainab said, what is happening? Sajjad, bring her in. Imam Sajjad went close to her and saw that the decision was such that she could not make it. Allah, take me. And Umar Abhab died in Medina in the hands of Imam Sajjad.
Give us tawfiq to be on the right path, give us the wisdom to hasten the request of the Prophet comes. Matam Hussein.